You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where our votes never count because we don't cast them. I'm your host, Justin Elmozeski, and I'm sure for many of you, it's been a crazy, crazy week. We're going to get into all that. I will say that for me, the next 2 weeks are pretty big. From the day this episode is released, my novel, The Cut, will be coming out in 8 days. That's from the Monday this episode's released. So if you're listening to this after that Monday, it's less than 8 days. Fewer than eight days. But before we go too deep down the rabbit hole, let's bring in my co-host joining me this trip from Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello. Yeah, it's been a terrible, terrible week. I mean, did you see that performance Michigan had on Saturday? Gets Indiana, the first loss in, like, I don't know, 100,000 years or something like that. First time Indiana's won against two ranked teams, like, ever? Question mark?
I mean, I'm still feeling the Clemson loss a little bit. I mean, they lost. We lost for the first time on a Saturday, and that was in 50 games. So we had a 50-game winning streak on Saturday, and we lost.
Yeah. I had some unboxing therapy. A friend of mine moved to Manhattan Beach, and it was a couple weekends ago. So I went over to his place, and we unboxed and broke down boxes and got his living room into a semblance of an order as therapy. Like every week in the football season, next week's a new week, so we'll see.
One game at a time, right? I thought when you were talking about unboxing, you meant you bought like a new product and you did an unboxing video on YouTube.
I should. I have some speakers coming. I've been slowly, like over the last 10 years, upgrading my audio stuff that I bought in college, believe it or not. Most of it I bought in college. Slowly, finally upgrading it. I have a good sound system. I did a good investment getting like secondhand stuff back in college, but it's finally time to upgrade the movie theater space here at Dale's Lawn. So, got some two new speakers. Very excited about.
Well, you'll have to keep us updated on if you film that video or not. As for now, I think we have a lot to talk about as far as what we went through this past week. Let's do it in Life on the Midside. Does life really suck? Are we just complaining? I hope that this mic is on. Cause I'm on a roll here. I hope this is making some sense. I hope that you'll throw up your hands and sing it and tell all the haters that they should just shut up and As always, if you would like to support the show, we greatly appreciate that. You can do so on Patreon or Locals, themidside.com/Patreon, themidside.com/Locals. Patreon is per episode, Locals is per month. So, William, I think the most obvious thing that we have to get into here, this is a little tough because, you know, we're trying to go down the no political route here. And I think we can do this in a way that's non-political. But I think the thing we most have to talk about is obviously the American presidential election was this entire past week. And I say this past week because usually it's one day, but it lasted much longer than a week. I mean, it lasted much longer than a day. It lasted a week.
Blech. Well, it's definitely going to last much longer than a week as well.
Right. So this is going to be ongoing, right? How long do you think this is going to last for?
Until the inauguration day, probably.
Wow. Oh boy. I'm really glad, William. That makes me really glad that, like, I basically checked out, right? So I watched for a couple hours on Tuesday night just to see what states were being called and everything. And then honestly, from that moment on, I just Googled the words presidential election and I clicked on, a couple sites to see what they were saying and what they weren't. And then I got some updates from Daniel. I would have phone conversations with him. But beyond that, even Twitter, like I haven't read a Twitter feed all week just because I'm trying to avoid everything.
Yeah, what is it that you're trying to avoid?
So I'm trying to avoid the irrational, disconnected perspectives from people on what's going on. I mean, I already know what they're doing and what they're saying, and I don't even need to see it. So I know the right is claiming it was stolen, and I know the left is throwing a party acting like they've defeated and vanquished evil, like this is some sort of movie and Trump was like the next Hitler. And I just I don't want to engage with any of that because it's not what's really going on here.
That can't possibly be true. I watched the Biden speech while we were unboxing shit and having a few adult beverages, and Biden promised to cure dementia, which seems a little self-serving.
Wait, did he really say that?
Yeah, and cancer. And yes.
What?
Yes. And systemic racism, which also confused me because he's the most powerful white man now. Well, I guess after inauguration, he'll be the most powerful white man. He's like the definition of the system, right? Of systemic racism. He's the definition of systemic racism. He's going to end systemic racism.
Well, is that why he talked about dementia and cancer? Because those are also systemic issues?
I don't know, but all these things will be done after one term of Biden. So
it has to be a setup, right? I mean, he has to be setting up. He's going to cure systemic racism by stepping down and letting the minority woman be president. That has to be what it is.
Maybe. I don't know. But
I'm so glad. That makes me really glad, dude. Really glad.
This is why I'm here to witness the farce, my friend. But more interesting to me, I wanted to talk a little bit about, like, we've talked before about interpersonal hostility, right? It's been a theme started a couple seasons ago on the show. It happens all the time. You know, I start memeing and witnessing the farce. I had a couple tweets making fun of the speech. And there are people who are taking it, of course, very, very seriously. And, you know, and to be sympathetic, you know, they saw everything Trump did as unpresidential, right? Forget the like whole Hitler stuff, like that's all TDS as well. But there's a particular part of Trump derangement syndrome that the people
TDS
who are more personable.
TDS.
There are people who are more personable, a good listener, longtime friend listener of the show who really has this visceral reaction to Trump, right? His attitude, they see him as a bully, right? And it's just such a, they get a disgust reaction is the best way I can describe it, right? From Trump. And so to see someone like Biden go up and give a fairly lukewarm, milquetoast sort of presidential acceptance speech, you know, they feel all warm and gooey inside, right? Like this is a return to, you know, you were talking about vanquishing the evil. They see it as like removing this clown, right? Like this, worse than a clown, right? Like this Jekyll from staining America, the American presidency, like as an office, right? But me pointing out that, you know, this return to normalcy that people have been wanting so much is also farcical, right? The promising of curing cancer and dementia, again, very self-serving, and systemic racism, the thing that is sort of like the Holy Spirit. It's everywhere and can never be proven.
Just interrupt. I don't care that he's self-serving in curing dementia. I mean, if anything, that's a good thing, right? I just think it's kind of absurd. He just openly admits it, basically, that he has it.
I just find it funny. You know, they see this as a return to normalcy, and I just couldn't help myself witnessing the farce, right? Like, that normalcy is exactly the thing that gave rise to a disgusting person like Trump in the first place, right? And I had to remind one person who was getting a little triggered by my comments. I was like, hey, remember, I hate both of these candidates. I didn't vote for either one. You know, I would be laughing and making fun of Trump's speech just as much as a Biden speech. And who knows? I mean, you know, those never Trumpers, man, they've they've got a lot to learn from this election, but we don't want to go into politics on that side. I want to come back to the interpersonal side.
Well, that's the what you're saying is exactly it about like the return to normalcy and everything. Like, to me, the return to normalcy is like, can we stop caring about politics on this level?
Exactly.
And what I mean by that is, we've always said this, that politics are a consequence on this show, right? And that's why we're going back and we're looking at the causes rather than looking at the consequences. We've been too focused on the consequences because we all have been. And that's part of this whole thing with this election, man, is like, yeah, like there are things I'm worried about with Biden being president, but I'm ready to just like be past this conversation because let's be honest, these people don't know who I am. They don't care who I am. They're never going to know who I am. They're never going to care who I am. And quite frankly, to get elected, they don't even really need to pretend anymore. Why would I invest in any of this?
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to usher in the new era, and I'm being a little fishy, tongue in cheek here with this, of where, you know, people can, be able to be in a group or interact with people and not have to pass a litmus test. I mean, we've defeated the evil. The evil's been vanquished, right?
I hope that's
so. We can treat each other with kindness and respect and I'm sure the Democrats will examine why they lost the proportion of minority voters that they so count on, right? I'm sure they'll be.
I can tell you're being sarcastic right now.
And I'm sure people will examine this social justice aspect. This part is not facetious. I think people will be examining the social justice aspects. And thinking,
I hope some people will. But man, yeah. My experience is like, I made a post on Instagram, an Instagram story, because I literally watched a few people's stories. And like, I saw some people just feeding into the division that this is causing, right? And it's supposed to be, you know, Biden's whole thing was like, I'm going to unite everyone, blah, blah, blah. And then these people who are seeing this as like a moral victory are using it to divide. And so I made a post about it. And I was like, thank you for showing me your character by making this about a time of division rather than looking at the fact that the country basically voted 50-50. And rather than seeing, hey, why are we divided, just feeding back into it. And then, man, I got this reply from somebody on Instagram, and it sums up everything that bothers me on an interpersonal level. It's in the presidential race this year, one side was unequivocally and quite clearly morally superior. Are all their positions perfect? No, but from a purely moral and democratic standpoint, there is only one choice if you care about these things. And also, social media is where people are. It's a place where the conversation is happening. When it's a global pandemic, where seeing people in person is hard to pull off. Now, the second part gives you an indication of where this person stands. But that first half, one side was unequivocally and quite clearly morally superior. From a purely moral and democratic standpoint, there was only one choice if you care about these things. If you didn't know, that could be said by either side, couldn't it have, William?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just like that. That's what you're interested in saying now.
Yeah. Let's be and let's be clear here. This is, you know, I need to pull that Sith quote right from Star Wars. Right. Only Sith thinks in absolutes. And in this case, I think it applies. You know, I actually absolutely believe in absolutes, absolutes based on context. But here, the context is what's being blown away by that, right? Like, these both parties are immoral. Let that sit and percolate for a second, right? Both parties are immoral. Both these candidates are immoral. The people in politics in America, they are complex. And the politics and deciding what the right thing to do is complex. And painting everyone who supports one candidate over another as moral or immoral is just plain stupid. You don't know the context, the reason why someone was voting one way or another. Like, the why matters, right? If you're voting for Biden because you support social justice, you're immoral, right? If you're voting for Biden because you want to return to civility in politics, I mean, I might disagree with you or agree with you. I don't know. I don't know if that's the right path if that's your main value. But, you know, that's at least not immoral on its face, right? And if you're voting for Trump because you want some sort of white ethnostate, then you're immoral. But if you're voting for Trump because you have a problem with our immigration policy, well, then that could be moral or immoral. I don't know. I'd have to understand more about your reason why, because the reason why matters, right? And that, I think that's the that's a thing that people are forgetting in their, like, I'm very much for judging people, but judging people takes work, right? You can't just look at one surface level thing and say immoral, right? Oh, you voted for this person? Completely immoral, morally bankrupt, to the ovens you. Right? And that's what we're seeing from some people. I mean, AOC's making a list and checking it twice for this Christmas, right?
Well, right. And that list is exactly the point. That's exactly the problem I have. Everything you said is very well taken about the judging and the complexity of it. And that's what I'm really bothered about. And that's what I've been trying to avoid, is like the simplicity and, I don't know, just the immaturity of being like, we won, let's celebrate, or we lost, they cheated. Like, I don't live in that
world. I don't
world.
Know.
Like, that's not
reality
to me.
Yeah, you do. Let's go back to Deflategate. For you, those of you playing the drinking game, now it's time to drink. There were people who only were involved in that controversy to sit back and cheer and jeer, right? Like, that's all. It was all just team politics, right? And I'm putting that right. with a little p. That's all it was. It was just a way to rag on the Patriots or you know, to sort of display your colors, right? And where you're, and who's morally superior. Well, clearly the people who don't support the Patriots are morally clearly superior because they're against cheating, right? It's the same thing. That's all that is. Like, I guess I'm not disturbed by that. To me, it's sort of like someone saying, oh, there was a sports ball game this weekend for the Super Bowl, right? Like, of course there's going to be people who are emotionally invested in this. I don't necessarily have a problem with that. I find it a little sad when, like, your emotional investment in politics is destroying your friendships, right? Just like I would find it sad if, like, you know, if the fact that I even had a roommate in college, I went to Ohio State, right? He was a transfer from Ohio State to Michigan. He was a diehard Ohio State fan, right? Like, should I have, like, moved out and, like, you know, kept my social distance and called him an evil asshole, right? To me, it's there's a difference here between being emotionally invested, right, which can be virtuous, right, and having it destroy all other aspects of your life, right, or destroy the potential of all other aspects of your life.
That's what I'm referring to. That's why I'm a bit confused. Is saying I do it with the Deflategate because I don't think I did.
No. I'm saying people did it, not you. People did do it with Deflategate, right? Like, friendships were ended, you know, lines were drawn, you know, and we see this in sports all the time, right? Even just in, like, rivalries or controversial calls or things like that, right? Like, this, to me, this is just playing out just like another one of those things in a lot of ways. And we can see the same sort of destructive, like, self-destructive behaviors that people are taking, right?
Well, right, and psychologically it's the tribalism, yeah. Right? The tribalism in our culture, and everything is a moral issue now. And, I mean, I think we're seeing this in a culture that hits close to home for us. And it's why I'm not really involved in that this culture. And honestly, I'm only really hearing about what's going on, I think, through Daniel is the one who's most informing me of what's going on. But
He lives in the belly of the beast.
Are you more aware of, like, the new objectivist schism right now?
Not particularly, which is very strange because I just took a class from Craig Biddle. He did an online class that I was interested in the topic, and I actually took it. It ended last week, once a week, in the evenings, and didn't even know that this latest controversy was, happening. I'm so disconnected from that world, you know, which is surprising, you know, as someone who has built several communities, around objectivism, just how little ARI is on even my radar at all.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm pretty much the same as you. I don't really know much of the details besides the stuff that's been shared via text message with me in our group chat there. But it just seems to me, man, it just seems like it's more of this tribalism where there's just these different sides. And look, I can't.
Well, hold on. I have to. I know just so that I have context. So I remember if we voted for, I can't remember who we voted for. We were immoral and didn't understand objectives and we didn't vote for someone. Who was it this time? Was it Biden? If we didn't vote for Biden, were we immoral and didn't understand objectivism? I didn't see if there were marching orders this year.
From my understanding, Yaron Brooks said that if you vote for Trump, then you're not really an objectivist. He didn't say it in those direct words, but he said it in exactly what you said, I believe.
Oh, okay. All right, good.
And part of it. And that's part of what I wonder is how much of this is exacerbated by, like, you know, there are more right-wing and left-wing objectivists, right? Because these are applications of philosophy, right? There's nothing in the philosophy that says you have to be one of the two sides. And then, you know, people are mad at ARI itself, and it's just all this stuff is said back and forth. And that's the thing I just don't understand about it. Because to me, I think there needs to be a big thing here. And it's the same thing. I see the same thing in the Snyder Cut fandom, where people are applying their own ideas to the movies. And then they're trying to say that that's what Zack Snyder said or would say. And people fight over that. Oh, who really is supporting Zack Snyder? Who really is helping Zack Snyder? And I think in the case of objectivism, there needs to be a separation between the ideas and Ayn Rand. And there even needs to be a separation between the ideas and Ayn Rand's applications of them. Everything Ayn Rand said doesn't have to be objectivist. And I mean, like, when she would go on interviews and talk about, like, in Playboy and on the Phil Donahue show, talk about current events, things like that, politics. And then there's the philosophy, which can be a thing all on its own. And I think that's the problem here, is people are taking these things and making it part of their identity. And that's what goes back to the politics, too, talking about one side is moral and one side isn't. When, you know, they say, oh, well, voting for Biden was the only moral choice. It's because they want to see themselves as moral because they have this identity.
And well, I think it's the same thing. Where did the respect for people's internal reasoning, where is that? Why is that so absent today? Like, even in you know, objectivist circles, it's so absent to until you have evidence to assume people are trying their best to understand the situation, right? Like, in other words, where's that tolerance for honesty but complete intolerance for evasion, right? I'm seeing the intolerance side, right? Just screaming evasion, right? But where's that hunt for the actual reasoning part of people's mind, right? Why bully people and say, if you don't do this, then you don't understand X, right? Like that seems like a bad argument, right? Like, you should be saying, like, where's the respect saying, like, hey, if you think this, let's figure out why, because I think this independently, I've come to this conclusion, and I don't see how you could come, you know, how you could come to the other conclusion. Show me your reasoning, right? Here's my reasoning. Where is that honest intellectual exchange? Why is it this appeal to tribalism, even among people who supposedly uphold reason?
Well, I personally think it goes back to the narcissism problem, where ultimately it's, as I said, their own identities are tied up with this so much that they don't see other people as real. It's, oh, this is what I think and this is what I believe, and therefore it's the only valid way of thinking about this. Where you even said it when you were talking about the whole voting for Biden or voting for Trump thing. I see reasons. Now, I don't necessarily agree with them because I didn't vote, but I see reasons. I understand arguments why you would vote for both candidates. I understand why someone would have voted for Biden. I understand why someone would have voted for Trump. I understand why someone would have voted for Joe Jurgensen. I understand all the arguments, and I accept that people believe them, and they believe them honestly. But that's also because I understand that people have different contexts than me, and people have different values than me, so they'll come to different conclusions. Even though I think that, you know, as you pointed out, politics as a whole are immoral. And I think that the people who get involved with them are necessarily going to be immoral with the way the current system is structured. That doesn't mean I think that picking one side or the other is the more moral choice. But that's because I just, as I said, these people don't know about me. They don't care about me. They're never going to know or care. It's just because I don't see myself as important. Who am I? Who am I to be like, oh, well, you know, your voice, your vote is obviously fucking retarded. You're obviously an evil person. Like, who am I to say that?
Yeah, I think it's connected back to the interpersonal hostility. I think it's a very puritanical sort of, it's one of the, you know, we talk about the sense of life of America kind of like saving us in a lot of ways, right? The rugged individualism, the fierce independence, right? And that's true, but there's another side of that sense of life, and it's that Puritan code, right? That conformity, that drive for moral purity, right? And it comes out in religious fervor and revivals. And when we zoom out and look at historically, I think this whole social justice and this moral politics is another sort of American revival, right? If we look at what happened in the Great Revival and other revival movements, in American history, I really see as this is playing out, this is just another echo of that cultural phenomenon. I think it'd be fascinating if we could, you know, maybe talk to someone who's a little more versed in American history and see, tease out what are those parallels and sort of what are the things that we can, you know, learn from those past things. But I think we have a good, I mean, you know, we always sort of talk about it here. We talk about how we have to look inside of ourselves and look at our own behavior, make sure we're not falling into these identity / tribalistic traps, right? And make sure that we're not judging others based on those things, right? And that we point out to ourselves and sometimes even out loud when we see that tribalism in action, right? And say, hey, that's not right. You know, people could have rational reasons for why they might disagree with you, right? And they could be mistaken, but they're still rational, right? It could be an error in knowledge, not an error in judgment.
Right. And the important thing is the trying to judge, not the success of it or not. We shouldn't be judging people based upon, oh, hey, you know, you made every right call, right? Being a good, let's use the football metaphor. Being a good head coach doesn't mean you always make the proper play call or you always have the best strategy. That certainly is to be admired when you have that level of skill. But that level of skill is a long-term result of using a good process. And that's what should be admired. And that I think maybe that's what bothers me the most, William, is so many people are out there using a bad process and then getting upset at everybody else for not following their bad process. And I think that that's probably what I find really, I guess that's what makes me mad and it's what really upsets me and what I don't want to engage in.
Cool. So how you think this strategy that of sort of disconnecting from it is helping?
I mean, it's helped me tremendously. I mean, this last week, I wasn't stressed out or worried about the election at all. I mean, we talked about it in some of my classes, especially my debate class, but it wasn't anything I cared about. But anyone I talked to who had any sort of view on it, they were just upset about it, especially the pro-Trump people. I just think it made my life a lot more enjoyable, and that's ultimately what the point is. To really invest my energy in the things that matter and actually affect my life.
Yeah.
Not things that are disconnected from me.
Yeah, and I think as we talk about things kind of upstream from politics, I think there's a lot of interesting work happening on the culture side in the culture war, quote unquote, to use the rights formulation of it for clarity, not for agreement. There's a lot of interesting and good things happening on that front that are more, you might be able to have more influence over, right? That may be more effective if you're thinking about, like, how do I make a difference, right? We talk about finding and seeking out more objective art, right? Better art and supporting it. You know, like, I've never bought more comic books than I have since the start of the pandemic. There's so many good comics coming out on Indiegogo and other places. Independent comics since the fall of the comic book industry at the beginning of the pandemic. And just as one example. And then, you know, there's tons of good academics kind of turning their head, you know, sort of started with the intellectual dark web people, so to speak, but now it's blossomed in a much more diverse set of disciplines. And we have people, you know, while the cultural institutions are falling, the more hard science people are coming to, you know, God Sod's book just came out and it's getting a lot of activity, The Parasitic Mind and others like that. Like this is being, the ideas are being identified. And, as we all know from G.I. Joe, knowing's half the battle. And I'd like to say we've had a part in that, right? Of really digging down into that and people who are, we being people who are more rational, the kind of ideas and way we treat each other is what's going to win out overall. Because that's, like you said, it's the process that is important. The having of the moral process is the thing that wins out in the long term.
Yeah, and it's interesting you bring it up this way, because I don't think it's just how we treat each other. It's how we treat ourselves. And, you know, I see things every day that we just excuse in this culture that I think are more harmful than anything. And I had an experience when I went to the movies. Like, I go to Disney Springs, and because that's where the movie theater is. And right now what's going on is the Epcot Food and Wine Festival. And people, when you go there, there are different booths set up where you can eat and drink different foods and consume different alcohol from around the world. And a common convention of going to Disney is when you're with a group, with a family, so you know where each other are, so you don't get disconnected from each other, you wear a t-shirt. That you know, you all wear the same t-shirt. And at Epcot, they all wear different ones about, like, related to the Food and Wine Festival. And they all tend to be related to alcohol. So I walk into Disney Springs and I see this group of women with a shirt on. It's red and it says, "Have yourself a merry little cocktail." And first of all, I mean, do I need to touch on the fact, William, that it's not even Thanksgiving yet?
Well,
at the beginning of November?
I'm sure the Christmas stuff has been out for a month. Come on now.
No, people make these shirts themselves. Disney doesn't make these shirts. Disney's not going to make shirts that promote drinking on that level.
Yeah, and, no, and I just meant, like, in the stores. It's already on people's mind because it's already in the stores.
Right. Well, so that's a whole different problem that we could delve into.
Dude, Amazon sent me a plan now for your Black Friday thing, like, last week.
Yeah, I mean, I might buy stuff online on Black Friday if there's, like, a super good deal, but I doubt it. And we can talk about that in a couple weeks. For me, it's just, this is something that's always bothered me about our culture. It's accepted alcoholism, man. The idea that all of you would get together and the thing that identifies you as a group and identifies your values to each other is drinking. And you're going to take such, like, a benevolent, warm phrase as "have yourself a merry little Christmas" and turn it into "have yourself a merry little cocktail." Like, it's the same thing to me as, like, I go to Dunkin' Donuts one morning and the woman working the drive-through window, her face mask has marijuana leaves, the marijuana leaves graphic. Or people who wear Budweiser paraphernalia or who wear weed socks and things like that. Like, I just don't get why this is okay. Like, I look at people like that and I think they're sad. I really, really think they're sad.
Well, what part of it... So let's break it down just like we'd break down the political argument. You know, I enjoy some pretty fancy cocktails. You know, Bavardiers are my favorite. I've had a few smoked bourbon cocktails with Daniel back when you know, we were on the same hemisphere. So what is different about valuing it as, you know, like any other cuisine, right? Like valuing it as a cuisine versus valuing the drinking itself, like the inebriation, right? Like I can see that if it were about the inebriation, right? Like if this was, you know, something about being sloshed, right? Then I could kind of understand it. It's less objectionable to me, just on its own. Like let me put it this way. If the picture accompanying this phrase was someone drunk and stumbling, I would agree. If it was some fancy bottle of wine as the graphic, then it would be more benevolent to me or more neutral. Does that make sense?
I get where you're coming from, but I mean, how many people do you see walking around wearing shirts that say, "Have yourself a merry little cheesecake," and then their entire group is wearing the shirt that says, "Have yourself a merry little cheesecake," when they go to the Cheesecake Factory? Or even in general, people don't really wear shirts advertising what food they eat. It's very, very rare. But we have this thing in this culture where you need to advertise the fact that you're drinking, and that needs to be the reason for your group getting together. And that's where I have a problem. Like, if it's not a primary, then okay. Like, okay, oh, hey, we're having a dinner party. Oh, we should all try this nice wine that I bought. And everyone has a glass of the wine. That doesn't bother me. But when you're going to the Epcot Food and Wine Festival and your primary thing is like, I need to advertise to everybody else at Disney right now, at Epcot right now, that we're here to drink. There's a secondhandedness to it.
There's a second hand. I'm not seeing it, Justin, because it is a food and wine festival. I mean, you are there to drink exotic wines and cocktails, right? So I understand what you're saying, but it's like I said, the accompanying graphic would be what would tip it one way or the other for me. Or the surrounding part of it.
If the shirt was about like, okay, we're here to try different things from around the world, it would be different. But it's not about that. It's about the actual act of the drinking. That's the problem. It's not like, oh, hey, we're going to sample food from across the world. And again, nobody would wear the shirt about like, have yourself a merry little cheesecake. Have yourself a merry little crepe. Crepe.
I don't know. I think I've seen some In-N-Out shirts. People take In-N-Out pretty seriously, too.
But that's part of the secondhandedness, too. In-N-Out is crap. People know it's crap, but it's a California identity
thing. It's California crap, though. That's why people get so into it.
And look, In-N-Out's fine. It's average. Like, if anyone was like, here's In-N-Out burger, I wouldn't hate it. I wouldn't love it. Like, In-N-Out's fine. I have no problem with In-N-Out.
For the price, you can't be.
Yeah, I mean, but to act like it's the greatest thing ever. But that's my point. Look at the way this is handled. When you go to this thing, there are no shirts about like, hey, we're here to, you know, enjoy the food. Or let me put it this way. When you go to Disney normally, people will have like, it's Brian's first birthday party. That doesn't bother me. That doesn't bother me at all. Because it's like, oh, hey, they're all here. And this is to make Brian feel good, to tell people we're celebrating Brian's first birthday. That doesn't bother me. Or however old he is, right? Six, whatever. Because for a one-year-old
first one, yeah, probably doesn't care.
right. But you get the point I'm making, right? Like stuff like that doesn't bother me. Or like people will say like Among Us, like I saw one, it was like Among Us at Disney, and it was every family had like a different Among Us graphic. I've never even played Among Us, but I knew it was a reference to the game because they all had different characters from the game, but they had the same color shirt. It was like Among Us at Disney. Like stuff like that doesn't bother me, but it's just like the focus on the act of drinking. The act of drinking really bothers me that it's celebrated on that level, because there are so many other things to celebrate in this culture. And we just have accepted alcoholism in America, and nobody wants to admit it. Nobody wants to admit it because they go, oh, well, what's the big deal? We just enjoy the drink. And if most people just enjoyed having a drink, that wouldn't be a problem. But that's not what it is. People who just enjoy having a drink don't spend the time and money on printing t-shirts that say, have yourself a merry little cocktail.
Well, if you were playing the Midside Drinking Game and you were supposed to drink when we psychologicalize, we have just completed that section of the podcast. So go ahead and take a drink.
I will always do that. So come at me. This is going to be a recurring theme. I just can't deal with it anymore. It's just... life is so much better not drinking. I can't tell you, like, people are like, why do you look so young? How do you stay in shape? And I'm like, well, first of all, I don't drink. And then they just scoff at me. It's like, do you realize, like, the amount of, do you realize the amount of carbs I haven't poured into my body? Do you realize the amount of deterioration that hasn't gone on in my body because I don't drink? Like, it's just insane to me. All right, I think that's a good place to end the Life on the Midside segment this week. So let's roll into talking about some movies and some trailers in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. If you would like to continue this conversation during the week, you can always do so in our Discord channel. Go to themidside.com or themidside.com/podcast. Click on any episode link and you will find the link to join Discord there. Maybe you want to take me to task over my stance on alcohol in America. Go ahead. I'd love to have that conversation. I'd love
or
to
share
engage.
Your favorite cocktail recipes. Both
but just, if you want to do that, go follow Daniel's wife on Instagram. I don't know if you follow Fiza, but it's all about calories. She's even holding a contest right now about like making an F style cocktail. You can go find her and follow her. So the first thing I want to talk about with the art section this week is last week I had said that I would give Machine Gun Kelly's full album a listen, his new album, and I did. And William, I'm interested in what you think of it, because my basic way of approaching it, and this is related to actually what I was just talking about, is I think that the music is very good. I think it's very catchy. I've always thought the way he looks and acts is, you know, in being on Warped Tour, he was more of a pop punker, and I think he proves that with this album. This is a pop punk album through and through, and some of the songs are tremendously catchy. The issue for me is just lyrically, it's uninteresting to me. A lot of it is about that, you know, the being drunk and being unable to stay sober and the self-hatred, and that's not the side of pop punk I've ever really enjoyed. You know, I've enjoyed the side of pop punk where it's celebrating life more than it's like, oh, life is so tough and this is how I cope with it.
Yeah. I can definitely see that. I think for me, when I listen to the album, I definitely get that. I get that sort of the malevolent universe sort of lyrics. But for me, the music kind of can override some of that. And so it's so not what is on the radio right now that it maybe I'm clinging to it like I would a mediocre sci-fi show, right? It's the equivalent of that to me, right? Where it's like, oh, this is good, right? This is good enough, right? This is something. This is a nice tall glass of cold ice water in the middle of the desert, sort of thing, right? There's not been a lot of great new music coming out. I mean, I appreciate the Newfound Glory album that came out, but you know, I think I've even asked you. I was like, hey, like we need to talk more about new albums, new artists coming out because my playlists are getting bare, you know, and I know that there's a little bit of a nascent sort of pop punk revival happening. And if this ushers that in, I think that'd be a great thing. And I think there are good things, like you said, there are good things to emulate here, right? Like, you know, Travis on the drums and the way the music is mixed in, layered is sort of one of the secrets of the pop punk formula, right? And reinvigorating that and innovating on that, rather than the, you know, the stale electronic drum beats that are always at what, like 128 beats per minute, you know, or 110. Like we only get one kind of meter, one kind of percussion session. There's always a drop. All these songs are so, the formula is so currently optimized, right? Almost like a programmer making an algorithm that we've sort of wrung it sort of dry. The current musical the current stuff that is going on musically is all sort of at a dead end.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, but I don't really listen to music to I don't really listen to the radio to have that sort of reaction the same way you are. Like, yeah, I agree that this is better than most mainstream stuff from what I've heard, but at the same time, compare it to the new Newfound Glory album. It doesn't compare on any level.
Yeah, but I think the audience here is different, right? Like, I think the reason I'm comparing this to mainstream is because this is a mainstream album, right? And it is getting mainstream engagement. So whereas the Newfound Glory album, as much as you and I love it, it's not, you know, it's never going to get played on the radio, right?
Well, yeah,
those stations are all gone, right?
Are they playing this on the radio?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, have we looked to see I'm going to look on Wikipedia right now.
Well, let's forget the radio even. What's its views on YouTube? Right?
Okay.
It was trending on YouTube for like weeks. So some of the songs and the videos.
Yeah, I'm going to pull it up right now to see if I can click on. So the Forget Me song is on there, right? With Halsey. Yeah. So that has 9.2 million. His video with Megan Fox, Bloody Valentine, has 48 million. My Ex's Best Friend, which is super catchy, has 18 million.
Those aren't numbers to scoff at, right?
Yeah. I mean, the song Drunk Face, which I don't particularly like because the lyrical content, is 5 million.
So that's sort of the context that I sort of look at it when I back up as a sort of reviewing it. But as far as listening, like you said, it's catchy. It's something I can put on. It's something I can put on the background or put in a playlist and appreciate because it's not the same songs I've listened to, right?
Yeah, I would pull out a subset of these songs. Like I said, Bloody Valentine is really good.
Yeah.
My Ex's Best Friend is really catchy. Like I've woken up a couple mornings with that stuck in my head. I really love Concert for Aliens.
Yeah,
like that's a really really good song. There might be another one.
But did you watch any of the videos, Justin?
Yeah, I've seen all the videos.
Yeah, okay.
And some of his older stuff is sort of more pop punk too.
Yeah, yep.
Let me see here. The album's called Tickets to My Downfall. Yeah, I think those are the main new ones. I mean, the Misery, you've mentioned before on the show, the Misery Business cover is pretty good. But yeah, those are the main ones. Concert for Aliens, My Ex's Best Friend, and Bloody Valentine. Those are particularly standout ones. But you're not going to listen to it, and any of them are particularly bad. The ones I just have the most trouble with are the ones that are focused on the drinking and the drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, let's turn to something I enjoyed a little bit more. In Discord this week, I talked about deciding between watching Let Him Go and Synchronic. Let Him Go is the movie starring Kevin Costner and Diane Lane about them trying to get their son back from the crazy family. It looks like sort of like a Western type feel to it. And Synchronic is a movie about two paramedics in New Orleans. And they keep going to these scenes where these drug overdoses have these weirdly horrific deaths that make no sense. And I decided between these two, and I decided on Synchronic because Synchronic was by these two guys I had never heard of before. So I'm trying to make an effort to watch movies and engage with content and people who are outside the system or who are new to the system, because I think that's the only way we're sort of going to be able to get things going on the right path. If we find these people who are unknown or who aren't part of what's normal, then you're going to get different content. Like, so far I've only watched the first episodes of Black Sails, but if you go, and it was good, but if you go to the IMDb, the people haven't really done anything else. So that shows me that that's someone different. And William, who makes The Expanse? Is it anyone who's entrenched in the system?
I don't think so. I don't remember. It's a pretty big writing team. I don't remember exactly. I'd have to look it up.
Okay, yeah, look that up while I'm talking. It's similar to, like, I've been watching, I'm probably a couple episodes behind at this point, but I've been watching Next on Fox. It's a limited series starring John Slattery, and it's by Manny Coto, one of my favorite writer-directors, but he is writer-showrunners, but he is outside the mainstream as far as, you know, being part of the contemporary Hollywood culture. So you get something a little bit different. And it ended up being the same thing. This movie is written by a guy, Synchronic is written by a guy named Justin Benson and directed by Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead. Apparently this is their third movie, their third collaboration. I might go back and check out the other two now because this was very interesting. What ended up happening in this movie was it's about these two paramedics who have been friends since high school. And they just have this dissatisfaction with their life. And the drug turns out, Synchronic, to be a drug that if your pineal gland hasn't frozen yet, it allows you to travel back in time for 7 minutes. It sort of uses the perspective Arrival uses on time travel. It's the idea that humans perceive time linearly, but it's not actually linear. And I thought they were going to do more with the structure of the movie itself. They do play with time a little bit in the structure, but they don't play with it in the way Arrival plays with it. But at the same time, I think this is a much better movie than Arrival. It ends up being sort of predictable what the ending is going to be once it gets to a certain point. But really, this whole movie is a meditation about how the past and the future make us appreciate today properly and make us appreciate the now properly, and how as humans we have to understand time linearly, and that's what gives life value and meaning for us. And it ended up in that sense being a very benevolent movie, and it actually, unlike a lot of movies nowadays, it made me feel something. And the fact that it was set in New Orleans, it gave it a different feel to it, gave it a different visuals to it. Although I would say that visually, it's probably not that interesting of a movie. It's more the story that's more interesting and the concepts that they're playing with. But I would recommend, if you get a chance, seeing this movie. I mean, if you're looking for the greatest movie ever, you're not going to find it. But, you know, if you like Christopher Nolan type movies, this is that kind of sort of style of movie. It very much made me think of Christopher Nolan when I was watching this. Is it as good of a Christopher Nolan movie? No, it's not, but they're also at the beginning of their careers, so let's see where these two guys go. So Synchronic, I think it's worth checking out.
Cool. Yeah, I'm going to add it to my list. So The Expanse, the main showrunner is Mark Fergus. You may remember him as the main writer or one of the main writers on Iron Man, the original one. He's also credited with Children of Men, Cowboys and Aliens.
Wait, the original Iron Man movie?
Yeah.
Well, there you go, right there.
Yeah. And so he's the main showrunner, now executive producer of The Expanse. So this week I didn't watch anything new because, of course, it was the 5th of November, so I watched V for Vendetta. And boy, I'm glad I watch this movie every year. So many interesting lessons and spiritual fuel to be getting to be mined from that movie. It's not perfect. It does have a little bit of the Wachowski brothers or sisters now, however you want to say that. It has a little bit of their nihilism in it, right? A little bit of their collectivism in it. But overall, even they could not override the themes that were that are just so blatant in that that comic, you know. The comic's a Alan Moore comic, right? Someone who also I don't like as a writer, but sometimes accidentally stumbles into greatness. Interesting to see, to watch it today. I don't think they could make that movie today. Now, I know they did an anniversary interview a couple years back. They talked about how they couldn't do it today because of terrorism, right? Like they shut off, what's the square there in London? I'm going to forget the name of it.
Trafalgar.
There you go. Trafalgar Square. You know, they actually shut that down and did that with actors, you know. They wouldn't be able to do that part today, but I don't think they would be able to do it today because it doesn't, it's free of that identitarian, right? Like the right quote unquote is evil there, but it's not really the right that is evil, right? It's the sort of corruption and deception that's the evil there, and the power lusting that's evil, and that's the universal theme, right? And you couldn't make it today because today it would have to be all about social justice, and what V does to Evie just couldn't be done in a social justice lens, right? And the acting is phenomenal. The acting is so phenomenal. And, you know, this time around, it really just struck me watching it, how few lines Evie has. Everything she's delivering is in her face and her reaction. I mean, she gets sort of monologued to a lot, right? And you have just this tremendous amount of expression coming out of her, that really just drives the movie forward and really brings that emotion to it. And then V, and played by several actors, but mostly by Hugo, I think, if I remember right. You know, how to, you know, only a stage actor could really pull that off, right? You're wearing a mask, you're taking off the entire face, you can't really do much, but somehow you feel that presence no matter what, whenever V is on the screen. So if you haven't watched it in a while, or heaven forbid if you've never seen it, definitely check out V for Vendetta. It is that time of year.
My main issue with that movie, and it's what you were talking about, not being steeped in the right and left, is the character that was very obviously a shot at Rush Limbaugh. It felt unnecessary to have something so pointedly contemporary for a story that was attempting to have timeless themes.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting, because I never really drew a parallel between that character and Rush Limbaugh. Maybe because it is such a caricature, and also he's in the military and stuff like that. Like, maybe I just never connected that. But yeah, that's
definitely
something I never saw.
The whole Rush Limbaugh comparison was the pills, because that's what the left really went after Rush Limbaugh about when he was addicted to pills.
Yeah, but even that dig doesn't... It fits in the story. So, you know, until you just mentioned that, I would have never even drawn that connection, right? Like, it fits so well in the story, right? That even if that was a dig, like, that's the great thing about when these kinds of writers accidentally integrate, right? I'm sure they did this, but they are skilled writers, right? Like, that part is integrated into the story, right? With the virus and him involved in a drug company and him being a stockholder and him being a pill, you know, addicted to pills. Like, that all makes sense. That all integrates with the theme, right?
I mean, I'd have to watch it again, because for me it didn't integrate. It was just it pulled me out of the movie, and I was like, this is obnoxious.
Yeah, I would encourage you, just like all the listeners, to watch it again. Watch it with fresh eyes. You know, like I said, it is integrated. That part is integrated with the rest of the theme of the same thing. I mean, you could say the same. You could make the same argument, Justin, about the you know, the Catholic priest, you know, diddling the children, right? That was also contemporary at the time. And
yeah, see, I didn't even remember that, but yeah, I'm sure I had the same reaction to that.
Yeah, and with this distance now, that baggage isn't there, and you could just appreciate it for what it's connecting to, right? Like obviously that person is morally corrupt. We see earlier that he's sort of giving them the ethical okay to infect all those people, right? So it does integrate in that way, right? Like, if now with some distance, it's less jarring. You know, those things have smoothed out over the years, if that makes any sense.
Maybe. If I ever watch it again, I'll come to that decision. But when we're talking about things we could see and we couldn't see, every week we do Trailer Takedown. And I try to post the trailers we're going to be talking about on the episode on themidside.com on Saturdays. So if you go there now while you're listening to the episode, you can watch them before we talk about them. You can watch them after we talk about them, or you can alternate. You watch a trailer, we talk about it. You watch a trailer, we talk about it, et cetera, et cetera.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
A Teacher is a FX series. I guess it's a remake of a movie from the 90s. I don't know. The movie from the 90s was like 2.5 stars, 3 stars. I don't know why you'd remake a 2.5 star movie. But there are greater problems with this movie, with this show. It's a show starring Kate Mara and an actor I really like. He was in... The Melissa and Joey show is where I first saw him, and then he was on that that movie. Crap, I can't remember the name of it, but I saw it was about the kid who came out of the closet in high school, and he did a very good job with it. He's a very good actor. He's a very good young actor, and I really appreciate him. And, you know, the stars in this movie, Kate Mara and him, who I can't remember his name, very tall, white guy, he's very funny. They make me want to see this, right? Because they're talented. And it's good to see Kate Mara get another role after what happened with the whole Fantastic Four thing. But the problem I have with this movie is about a female teacher who cheats on her husband with her student. And I just don't know why you would ever need to make this story. I just don't get on any level what's appealing about this story. And I'm starting to see, in the same way that I saw that they were going to push for the acceptance of trans people and transgender in the mainstream, I'm starting to see that kind of stuff with pedophilia, where they're trying, it seems like, even with the way this trailer is cut, like they're trying to make us feel sympathy for this female teacher. And I just can't. I just can't. This just seems horribly misguided to me. Tackle.
You know, it's interesting that we just talked about V for Vendetta and how I thought it couldn't be made today because of the social justice lens. I don't see how this cannot be about what you said, Justin. I mean, obviously the underdeveloped, you know, 16, 17-year-old male must be the one with all the power in this relationship, right? Right? I mean, if this is being made today, this is going to be about how this is somehow the male's fault. Right? That's got to be what it's going to be. It can't be any other way. It cannot survive in today's mainstream culture if it's not that way. And I think you're right. I think it's very strange. Like, it is a strange choice to be remade, right? So, I don't know. There was nothing really appealing to me in this at all. Was the one that was done before, was it a morality tale, right? Like the dangers of this kind of relationship. I mean, I guess there would be a point in that, right? Like how this destroys lives and destroys everyone's future and that sort of stuff, right? But I don't know. I don't know. I don't know in today's, like, because the morals of today are so twisted and it's all about power and privilege, I don't understand how that can be, how that morality tale could be anything but coming out on the side of this is just another thing that we need to accept. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't think I'll see this. I'm going to tackle it.
Tackle. Second trailer.
Triggered is a horror movie about a group of kids who wake up in the jungle or they're camping. I don't know. I don't know where they are. But one of their old teachers has strapped vests to them that says how long they have left to live. And if the vest, you know, the timer finishes, they explode, sort of like in Suicide Squad. But if they kill each other, they take that other person's time so they can live for longer. I like this premise a lot. This is a very, very, very inventive premise. I like that premise a lot, especially with the wrinkle of, like, their old teacher is doing this. It's interesting contrast with the last movie, right, when we're talking about teachers. Now there's sort of a different twisted dynamic here, but at least it's a horror movie, right? It's saying, this is horrible that's happening, and what does it mean? My main problem with this trailer, though, is it all looks the same. Like, there's nothing visually that stands out about this trailer at all. Like, it's just very one shot, two shots with the same sort of dark color palette. Nothing interestingly framed. That said, I probably will end up seeing it unless there's something else that comes out around the same time that would make me want to see it more. But if not, the premise is enough for me to give this a chance. Tentative hug.
Hug.
Yeah, horror's not my genre, so because of the lack of anything interesting, I don't know that this would be something for me. But when I look at it, when I look at it, it seems like sort of one of those B movies that you would see back in the day, right? There's nothing particularly bad about the production quality, but it just, I don't know. It doesn't, I don't know that it's going to say anything interesting other than just be basically the equivalent of like the popcorn action movies that I like. But since this isn't my genre, it doesn't really look interesting to me. So I will tackle.
Tackle. Third trailer.
The Stand-In looks to be a version of The King and Me starring Drew Barrymore. In it, Drew Barrymore plays two roles, a famous comic actress who's sort of bored with her life and in a cycle of self-destruction where she has to check into rehab, and the stand-in who has followed her throughout her career. So for those who are unfamiliar with the concept of a stand-in, so that actors don't get tired when the cinematographer and the crew frame shots, there is a role, especially on movies with bigger budgets, blockbuster movies, there's a role for people called stand-ins who look similar. They have a similar build, a similar height to the stars, so they can be there while all the lighting and the framing is being fixed. This movie sees the stand-in start to take over for the main actress because the main actress is, she doesn't want to go to rehab, but then after that, there are things that she very much is tired of having to do, public appearances and things like that. And the movie then seems to hint at, the trailer seems to hint at, that the stand-in is even going to get a movie role because she's always wanted to be an actress. And the comedic actress says, well, no, you could do this role. I believe in you. So it seems to be that version of The King and Me, right? Where the person and it looks like the king, so they swap and impersonate each other. Or The Prince and the Pauper, or whatever the story is called, right? There are very many variations on the story. Drew Barrymore is sort of one of these actresses that has kind of been forgotten by our current system. You don't really see a lot of movies like this anymore. So I would be willing to give this movie a chance. I would be willing to see how they execute it and what the point of doing it in this way is. So again, this would be another tentative hug for me.
Hug.
Yeah, this actually was interesting. I think I like when actors are asked to do multiple roles, right? Like that can be very interesting. And but this is also, because it's like I'm trying to emulate another person, it seems the premise just seems interesting. I know it's been done in a lot of different ways, but this idea of like sort of taking over a star's life and then what would it actually be like could have some very interesting consequences. So the story looks interesting. It looks like it's shot pretty well, and unlike the last movie, this actually wasn't all, you know, black and faded. So this looks like something I could follow along. I know it's a different genre, so obviously. And it is comedy. So, you know, I have a very high bar for comedy. So I was sort of sitting on the fence. But this is something that I would put on Netflix and give it a chance. So I'm going to give it a Netflix and hug.
Netflix and hug. Final trailer.
Vanguard is an action movie starring Jackie Chan. Jackie Chan is another one of those actors who's sort of been forgotten in our current culture, but he's always enjoyable to watch. The problem is I can't for the life of me remember what this movie's about, besides just being a Jackie Chan action movie. Now, does that mean I'm never going to watch it in my life? Oh, it doesn't mean that. At some point, this may be on or maybe on Netflix and I watch it because I just want to watch something like it. But as far as making this a priority and having this be any sort of thing that I go out of my way to see, it's definitely not, but it's definitely something to be aware of as it's being made. And you know, if you sit down and watch it, I'm sure you'll have a good time. But for me, it's going to be a tackle.
Just the thumbnail is hilarious. It's the same face we've seen on Jackie Chan 1,000 times. I feel like when I want my Jackie Chan fix, there's a lot of other movies that I would reach for rather than this one. It worries me. You know, for a while when Jackie was trying to break into the American audience, he, there were a lot of really cool and interesting movies, and it was interesting to see, and there's some really funny moments. But I have a feeling this one's not made for us, Justin. I have a feeling this is made for the Chinese audience. So maybe I'll just leave it for the Chinese audience. So I'll tackle.
Tackle.
All right, that brings this week's episode to a close. What did we learn this trip, William?
Well, I learned not to wear my I drink and I know things shirt next time I hang out with Justin. Justin, what did you learn this week?
That's why I hate that line. Like, and I think that's what's wrong with Tyrion's character. I think that comes down to his issues of the way his family treated him and everything. I don't know what I learned this week. I learned
to watch V for Vendetta and give it a chance, dude. Yeah, don't bring all your cultural baggage in. I'm telling you, it's spiritual fuel.
The two brother directors who both happen to be trans at the same time, I'm the one bringing in my cultural baggage, not them.
Okay. You can watch it, Justin, and not watch the director's commentary and not watch the interviews. You can just look at it as art, right? And look at it, only read it as its own piece, right? And see if you can get some spiritual fuel out of it. Remember, I mine for that, right? I mine for spiritual fuel. So
yeah, I think you try too hard. That's what I learned. William tries too hard to redeem things. All right, I want to thank you all for listening to the show. It's always great to have you listening. It's always great to have you engaging with us. We had a bunch of new people join Discord this week. That's always fun to see. Always appreciate that. We appreciate our Liberty.me listeners. I think that we have a lot more in common going forward than we did in the past. So always great to have you around. If you want to check out my book that's coming out, you can do so at themidside.com/thecut. Got a bunch of pre-orders up there. You can get a Mobi pre-order for Kindle, an EPUB PDF pre-order. You can get a pre-order of a signed copy. And then on the 17th, you'll be able to actually buy the paperback itself. If you want to support us, you can always do so on Patreon or Locals. Patreons per episode. Locals is per month. themidside.com/Patreon, themidside.com/locals. And as always, the best way to promote this show and to help us out and to help yourself out is to tell a friend. Tell a friend who also would really enjoy this podcast. This concludes your journey into The Midside. I'm Justin Emelznetsky reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a very special day.
All right, I'm just going to click stop because clearly we have nothing to end the episode with here.